Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
So glad you could be with us for this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry. With me today is Eric Johnson, my colleague at MRM. We are continuing our look at a book titled Mormon Enigma, Emma Hale Smith, written by Linda King Newell and Valene Tippetts Avery. It's a look at early Mormon history, primarily focusing on Joseph Smith's wife, Emma Smith. And we're looking at Chapter 2. But before we get into Chapter 2, yesterday we were going through a statement that Isaac Hale, Joseph Smith's father-in-law, made. He said this before a justice of the peace, and it was dated March 20th, 1834. One of the reasons why Isaac Hale had problems with Joseph Smith and did not want Joseph Smith marrying his daughter was because he was involved in an occupation known as money digging. And as we've mentioned so far, Mormon apologists have tried very hard to make it sound as if money digging was really an occupation that was not controversial. And there's no doubt that a lot of people during Joseph Smith's day were involved in it, but it was not merely looking for coins in the ground or buried watches that had been overlooked. There was a supernatural element involved in this practice. That's what Joseph Smith was known for. That's why Josiah Stoll hired Joseph Smith and his father, who was also involved in money digging. It was for the supernatural ability that they claimed to have in finding buried treasure, not just looking for abandoned silver mines, as Mormon apologists would like to tell you. In this affidavit by Isaac Hale, he goes through and explains some of the problems that he has with Joseph Smith. Now, this affidavit you can find online. I mean, it's not hidden. If you want to read it for yourself, just go ahead and look it up. Just put statement by Isaac Hale, and I'm sure you'll Google that and we'll find it in no time. This is how we found it. Anyway, we're going to finish this up and continue looking at Chapter 2 in the book, but he mentions not only the money-digging aspect of Joseph Smith, but he also mentions the gold plates that Joseph Smith claimed to have found. He carried them in a box when he presented them to Isaac Hale, but he told Isaac Hale he was not allowed to look inside. And of course, Isaac Hale finds that to be very suspicious, and that certainly does not alleviate the suspicions that Isaac Hale had for Joseph Smith.
Yeah, he said, the manner in which he pretended to read and interpret Joseph Smith was the same as when he looked for the money diggers with the stone in his hat and his hat over his face while the book of plates were at the same time in the woods.
Now, that's an interesting point to bring out, because this is how David Whitmer described the translation of the plates in his book, An Address to All Believers in Christ. Joseph Smith would take the seer stone, a stone that he found while digging a well with his brother Hiram for a man by the name of Chase. He found this chocolate-colored, egg-shaped stone, and he would place the stone into a hat. He would draw the hat closely around his face to exclude the light, and in the darkness, a spiritual light would shine. Something resembling parchment would appear, and on that appeared the writing. So do you see the similarity here, folks? He's using the same means to bring about this religious book, this book from God, the same way he was looking for buried treasure. He's using the same means. Now you have to ask yourself, if his face is in a hat looking at a rock, why did he even need the plates in the first place? He's not looking at the plates. He's looking at a rock in the darkness of a hat. That's how this is all taking place. Does that not sound a little suspicious?
If you want full details on what Bill is talking about, you can go to our website, mrm.org, and put /translation. We have an article called A Seer's Stone in a Hat, Translating the Book of Mormon. not only do we have an article there, but we also have a 10-minute video you can watch as well. So you can get full information on a lot more details than what we can give just in a few minutes. But this is a very important point, I think.
Because it shows why Isaac Hale was reluctant to have his daughter marry Joseph Smith. And a lot of Mormons don't think about this. Every time any kind of controversy arises around Joseph Smith, it's only because, well, he was a prophet of God and these people were just unspiritual non-believers trying to quench the work of God. That's not really the case. Isaac Hale is protective of his daughter. We can understand that. But he saw a lot of things in Joseph Smith that troubled him. In fact, look at how he ends this statement with that last paragraph.
He says, Joseph Smith Jr. resided near me for some time after this, and I had a good opportunity of becoming acquainted with him and somewhat acquainted with his associates. And I conscientiously believe from the facts I have detailed and from many other circumstances, which I do not deem it necessary to relate, that the whole Book of Mormon, so-called, is a silly fabrication of falsehood and wickedness, got up for speculation, and with a design to dupe the credulous and unwary, and in order that his fabricators might live upon the spoils of those who swallowed the deception.
You know, it's interesting the way he describes that when he talks about it was designed to dupe the credulous and unwary. That's what we hear from a lot of ex-Mormons. When you talk to a lot of ex-Mormons, Mormons who have come to realize that Joseph Smith's story was anything but true, but was in fact a fabrication, many of them feel just like that, that they were duped. And there's a lot of anger that accompanies a person who realizes that the religious leaders that they trusted were actually part of the deception. Because I have to personally believe that the leadership knows the story can't be true. I really doubt that someone like Thomas Monson or a Boyd Packer or Russell M. Nelson really believe this story. I just have a difficulty believing that. They are probably acquainted with much more information, sensitive information, than the average member.
Absolutely, and nobody gets to look in those vaults. They have sealed those vaults except for a very few, and even those very few are, people that are well within the church. This is not something that you and I or even a Mormon in good standing can go see.
No, an average old Mormon can't go down to the archives and say, hey, I want to look in your archives and I want to just pick out anything I want. Some things they can, because I've done that myself. But let's say you talked about the vault, the president's vault. Who knows what's in there? Do you think they're going to give just anybody permission to go rummaging around? I would love to. You know what I would love to go see especially? Journals. Journals that were written by early Mormons in Mormon history. I'd love to hear their view on some of the issues that I think have been whitewashed over the years.
And these are things that are not going to be put on display in the Church History Museum. You're not going to see, for instance, that seer stone we're talking about. I mean, these are embarrassing things, and so you just keep those hidden away in the vault.
That would be amazing if they did put the seer stone on display. I'm encouraging the church. If any of you guys are listening, hey, put the seer stone on display. I would love for you to have a sign out there explaining what Joseph Smith did with this. Broadcast it. If this is your history and you're proud of your history, let people know what your history is. Why are you covering it up, for Pete's sake? Just tell everybody what your history is really all about and allow them to truly practice what you call their free agency. How can you expect people to practice what the Mormons define as free agency when you don't give them full disclosure? You don't. The church does not do that.
I don't think they're interested in giving full disclosure.
No, they'd want you to sidestep the facts and merely get a feeling, and hopefully the feeling is what's going to compel you to join the church.
And that goes back to last week's shows when we were talking about the authors who went through so much persecution because they told something that was true, but it brought bad light to Joseph Smith and the church, and that's a big no-no in this church.
In chapter 2, titled The Elect Lady, 1827 to 1830, it says in the second paragraph that Emma could see that living in her parents' home would be difficult. She and Joseph moved nearby into the house her brother Jesse left when he moved to Illinois. But as we mentioned before, eventually Joseph and Emma would leave Pennsylvania, and she would never see her parents again. It's kind of a tragic story when you think about it, but she would never see her parents again. Now, on page 25, it talks about how Joseph Smith now is going to commence translating the plates. What does it say?
Well, there? And even on page 24, I just want to bring out this sentence before I go to page 25, but the confrontation with Isaac over the gold plates destroyed Joseph's hope of acceptance by Emma's family. We have to understand these plates caused a big division, because as we see in his affidavit, this is a major problem. Then on page 25, it says, as winter settled in, Joseph turned his attention to translating the plates. Although Emma never saw the plates, she believed he had them.
Now, see, that's telling. She never saw the plates. She never saw the plates. But go on and finish that paragraph, because that's important.
Emma lifted and moved the plates as she dusted around them.
So the fact is, she never looked at them, but she apparently had to be alone with the plates, I would imagine, for hours at a time during the day while Joseph Smith was gone. Mm-hmm. And she never bothered to peek, which showed her trust in her husband. That's one thing that it shows. But what it tells me is it also shows how Joseph Smith had no problem lying to his wife about what was wrapped up in that covering. She talks about them being pliable like thick paper and would rustle with a metallic sound when the edges were moved by the thumb, as one does sometimes thumb the edges of a book. The fact that these pages made a metallic sound tells us that the plates could not possibly have been made of gold, because gold plates would not have made that sound. It's too soft.
She trusted him to the very end of her life when she was 74. She said this, "I believe he was everything he professed to be." Even then, she was still believing in Joseph Smith.
Well, that's what she says. I wonder what her real thoughts were sometimes, because certainly she went through a lot of horrible experiences being Joseph Smith's wife. The fact that he was committing adultery on her and trying to excuse it as being a divine command by God must have been very painful for Emma Smith. And we're going to look at that, because in this book, they talk about that. They go into a lot of detail regarding that aspect of Joseph Smith's life. We'll continue this tomorrow.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism. You just listened to today's broadcast of Viewpoint on Mormonism. But did you know that you can hear previous shows at your convenience? The Viewpoint on Mormonism podcast is free on the internet and will help you learn more about the LDS religion. Feel free to listen on your computer or download to your favorite listening device. Just go to mrm.org and click on the right side where it says On Air. All of our shows are here, so visit mrm.org today. At Mormonism Research Ministry, we're committed to equipping Christian believers to effectively share their faith with their Mormon friends and loved ones. That's why we produce Viewpoint on Mormonism, as well as operate our website, mrm.org, where you can find a wealth of information on this topic. We also have books and downloadable MP3s available online. In addition, we invite you to join in on the conversation at our blog site called Mormon Coffee. We want to be your resource for helping you better share the Christian faith.